everybody, welcome to another episode of the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Today I'm joined by my co-host Sophie Dimelo. How are you doing, Sophie? Good?
Yeah, thanks John. Hi everyone.
So today we got on Alejandra Leon. Is that how we pronounce the name?
Almost there. It's Alejandra. It's a Spanish, but you can call me Ali, like everyone else. Yeah.
Okay, Ali's name. I thought I'd try to give you like the full name and try to pronounce it correctly for the first one. But Ali, you're working for Microsoft currently within the AI space, and obviously that is absolutely booming within the industry at the moment, really taking off. Can you just give us a bit of an overview of what you do at Microsoft, and then we can just go from there?
Yeah, so I work for industry solutions. This is the part of Microsoft that they do the consulting part and implement all the different Microsoft products. And I'm part of the large strategic deal team. So I work with big accounts worldwide. So for example, with the likes of Shell, Infosys, and so on. My area of expertise is data and AI, and especially like you mentioned, John, right now AI is pretty hot, so we have lots of companies asking for different implementations around that area. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I was just saying to Sophie before we joined, I've done non-stop Microsoft 365 Copilot talks for the past couple of weeks now. Like, I've got strong deck. I'm getting all right at it now. Like, I've got 2 hours.
You're the demo guy now.
yeah, it's getting there. But, you know, it must just be a really kind of exciting time. But let's just wind back a bit. Let's talk about you at school. What did Ali want to be when she grew up? What was school like, and what was like your exposure to technology and stuff whilst at school?
Right. So my parents are from Peru and they migrated to Australia, but later on, so almost at the end of high school. In Peru, sort of just in primary and secondary school, I think you are influenced a lot by what your parents said you should be doing. I discovered that it's a much more free society when I migrated to Australia. Engineering was always on the cards. I always liked maths and science, but I always was like sort of interested in medicine and biology and so on. It just started to happen that I was really interested in some programs. And then I attended some classes of computer science when I moved to Australia. And then, you know, it all came from there. And I decided, no, I'm going to follow this. I think I can do really well in this area. And it's kind of like solving a puzzle, right? It's like different parts that you have to put together in order to solve a problem. So I quite like that. I studied computer science and then I did an MBA in business. But I think I feel the most proud about my computer science part. It was really hard, sometimes really lonely as well, because there were not many girls studying the career. So sometimes it feels very isolated. You know, you want to have just like a nice chat with a friend that it's a girl that will understand certain things and no one is there. So it's not the same. I think it's much better now, but it's still, I think the numbers are quite low for women in technology.
Yeah. So how did you, when you were doing your studies then and feeling that sense of loneliness and you were essentially in a very male dominating course, how did you overcome that and how did you get past it, if you ever did?
Yeah, in the beginning it's really tough, I have to say, because you're very conscious that you should be a lot more, not show much your, the qualities that a girl will normally show, like empathy and maybe being a little bit more in tune with your sense that you should be doing things for a group, for a team, but also just like sort of, not showing sometimes your emotions that much because you are concern about how you will be perceived by other people and so on. That in the beginning, it was quite tough. I have to say, then I learned that I just have to, you know, like, so you have to integrate, you have to evolve. Otherwise, you just, there's no way that you can survive in the career. So there is sometimes, like, for example, I think with programming, you have to do biggest lots of times. You have to spend a lot of time coding. And it doesn't fit sometimes like the schedule of someone that will tend to do things for the family or like sort of go to sports or do other things. So sometimes it just consumes all your life. So I can understand why, you know, many girls sometimes are passionate about that area. The way that I tried to change that for myself, it was to find good role models. So I started to see professors in university that there were females that were doing really cool stuff. I tried to copy a little bit what they were doing, you know, their attitudes, and sometimes not bothering too much of one comment or other comment from a boy, or just like areas that they are doing more research. And when I started to find work, learning from different mentors and so on. But yeah, it is quite tough in the beginning when you are starting because you're quite insecure of, you know, like sort of what is there. Once you start to build more experience, and I work for different international companies in Europe as well. I live in the Netherlands for 11 years. Nice. And getting the exposure to different companies, like I work for Shell, Philips, and IKEA, you know, like sort of working with the Swedes, working with the Dutch, working with, in England as well. And so it just gives you that kind of variety of knowing different cultures, and then you build that resilience that, yeah, takes you further in your career.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've had some like really cool moves around the world and also companies as well, haven't you? Like some massive names, so Shell, absolutely massive, Philips, absolutely massive, IKEA, mm-hmm. huge company. So you do like to go to the big companies.
Yeah, somehow I didn't even look to go into that companies. It's just, you know, you start with one and somehow like the architecture, because I was an architect working as a tech lead, it's quite similar for that other corporation, or that other corporation looks an angle from the other corporation that they want to follow, make it better or make it in a different way for them. And so that's how, you know, I end up being in all the different companies.
And has that always been in that AI, augmented reality and data space? Has that kind of always been the focus of your work?
Yes, that's been the focus of my work. However, you know, especially for big companies, they have a very complex landscape. So you have to know different things, like from on-prem infrastructure to SharePoint, you know, like you have to sometimes just like, oh, you don't know something and you have to learn that part in order to understand a little bit more what is happening. So yeah, and I think this is one thing that I really like about engineering. It shows you a little bit how to solve a problem. So it's not just knowing the theory, it's about how you solve a problem. Mm. So yeah, it was a lot of things that I didn't know. I never had the experience towards that particular platform. And then I was just like learning, putting the dots together from previous projects and just figuring out. I mean, some of the stuff, for example, when we were doing augmented reality with IKEA, it was pretty new. And it was like, you know, you just have to find out what is augmented reality first and how can it look here and so on. It's just... yeah, it's all quite innovative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Sorry if you've answered it, but yeah, it's just more for me really, and I'm intrigued that you've worked at some really good organisations, and now you work at Microsoft, which, you know, is absolutely incredible. But when you go for these roles, what is it that you go for, or is there certain things that you look for when it comes to, you know, teams and things like that?
Yeah, it's mostly learning, I will say. So I have gone for positions where I can learn, I stretch myself the most. Sometimes I also have gone for managers. Like if you have someone mm-hmm. that is a really good manager, then I follow them because I know that I would learn from them. And yeah. once the moment arrives where you need to be recognized, you will be recognized as well. I just like to feel good also in a job. It's not just about the pay or like what you're doing. Yeah, you want to feel like you belong and you feel safe and so on. So but in terms of assignments, I have gone for things that will stretch me in terms of new things or things that I'm interested but I don't know much, and then I go for it and learn more about that.
Yeah, nice. I completely get that. When you were growing up, it's a shame, sort of just going back, it's a shame that you felt like you couldn't be yourself and you had to be a certain way potentially within your course. Through that, was there anyone, and in your career now, is there anyone that's been a really supportive figure and mentored you into who you are today?
There is several people at Microsoft, LTs, also at Shell, women, men. Sometimes instead of asking, "Oh, can you be my mentor?" I learned that it's easier to say, "Can you have like 30 minutes of your time to have a mentorship session?" People are more willing to do that, and you could do it in a monthly basis or every couple of months and so on. I think it's very important that you get role models and people that will help you, even with just with example and making you feel that you belong. I'm Latin, so I like to see people that are there, you can just copy what you can see, right? That there is a phrase around yeah. that. And I think sometimes you, especially in the tech industry, there are not many Latinos. So I found some of them online, and I just tend to follow them as well on social media to see what they are doing and so on. During the time in the different companies, I just try to find also female LT that they're willing to have a chat, a coffee, or male as well, like just, you know, if they're open for that as well. Try to learn from them. Also, try to offer some, ask if, you know, if you need that help with this particular project, this is my expertise, I'm happy to help you and so on. So it also feels like there is that sense of community. No, it's not just one way, but actually both ways, and you are helping each other as well. Yeah.
I feel like it's a common theme on this podcast that when we interview successful women like yourself and we have them as a speaker, is that we always look for other female leaders, and I think it's because it's easier then to see exactly like what you were saying, to see us in that position and to share successes and all that sort of stuff. So I think what you've said with especially reaching out and having the 30 minutes to just ask, you know, can I have 30 minutes of your time and stuff, I think that's really good advice for someone wanting to maybe come into the community or come into a role within tech.
Yeah, indeed.
Do you have much involvement? Sorry, John, go on.
Go for it.
Do you have much involvement yourself within the tech community?
I used to have a lot more in previous roles. I've been quite involved in women in tech when I was in Europe. There is different forums in the UK. I presented in the Excel in London. We have different forums and participated in different conferences around that. I have not done it lately, but I'm always, you know, like sort of willing to coach younger employees or like sort of apprentices and so on. And I'm trying, because we move, my family and I, we moved to Australia or back to Australia a year ago. Mm-hmm. My husband is from Wales, so we just, sort of moved from Europe now to here. And then we're like trying to find also the different circles that we had back in Europe. So probably I will join one pretty soon. But yeah, I being involved in the tech community in that way, I think it's important to give that role models, because when I was going to conference, this is what I look right, like sort of also to have that role models, to have that chat. Otherwise, it feels like you don't belong there, and it's not a nice way to think. Yeah.
How have you found Australia and the different sort of forums and things like that? Is it any different to what it was in Europe or?
Yeah, I think Europe is quite vibrant, and I think it's a bit more going on. I mean, obviously, because of the proximity to different countries as well. And it was tons of things in the UK, which I really miss. But I think Australia also is trying to build that. There is different groups for developers. You know, like if you're interested in GitHub or in DAMA as well, which is the data association. So it just depends. I think you have to look a little bit harder, because it's, you know, Australia is such a big country that it's not like just like popping in for an hour, you know, like driving, and then you are from the Netherlands to Belgium. It takes a lot of effort to go from one place to another.
It's always been something that I've, well, thought about really, is would I want to go to Australia but still work in tech and stuff. It's something that me and my partner think about quite a lot, so it's interesting.
It's such a friendly country, and that's one of the things I think I'm so glad I'm back. And for just quality of life is amazing. People are super friendly. It's just ridiculous how friendly they are. So,
but that sounds nice.
I've got a question. At Microsoft, you had the job title, which I think is like the coolest job title in the whole wide world. Global black belt, like that's just like, isn't that like the most coolest like job title in the world? I've heard a global black belt in security. And can you give us like an overview of what that job entails, please? Because that's really cool. Yeah.
that was my previous role. Yeah. And yeah, it's a really cool title. And I think they tried to make some analogies with karate or judo. I mean, I have never done this, but I know the black belt status is the highest one, right? So in Microsoft, they try to represent that you have a deep knowledge of technical expertise that you can go and present to different customers and so on. It certainly is a really cool title and opens the doors even at Microsoft, because sometimes you're working with a customer and you have an account team, and then when you're a global black belt, they tell you, okay, so we have this project and we have these use cases, you know, like can you help us with that? I was a part of the Cosmos DB team, Postgres, Cosmos DB, so all non-relational, relational databases. So it was a lot of cool stuff there going on as well. Yeah.
No, that's sick. That's just a cool name. And then obviously you went from that to over to Australia. That's when you moved in April 2022.
Yeah.
And now you're working as a worldwide sales execution, what am I talking about, in industry solutions and delivery. So like again, like that's a mouthful, but a really cool another
that's Microsoft job titles for you. Sometimes it's just like I have to look to remember what is my job title now. I mean I'm the same, so I'm just
how do you even like go what's your role? Well, I'm a worldwide sales execution industry solutions and delivery. Yeah. Wow.
In the end, it's just I just help customers to implement different Azure products. So that's it, right? They just give you fancy titles. So.
Oh, you're reporting to the vice president of service sales. So you know that's pretty high up in the pecking order, if you ask me. Like, what's the kind of goal for Microsoft? What's like the ambition for your career whilst there?
I mean, there is a huge ambition now with Microsoft, with AI and OpenAI. The company is putting a lot of resources around that area. You know, in terms of the strategic direction, it's very obvious that this is the strategic direction going into AI. They are building different data centers. They're trying to improve all the current Microsoft products with AI. So you're adding that layer on top and creating better products. Like you have, you mentioned Copilot, right, for security, right? So we are doing that. So if you think all that framework and language models that they are part of OpenAI, we are infusing into the different platforms, in the different SaaS and PaaS solutions that we have in this case for you, like it was security. So yeah, there is a huge strategic push in that direction. And what I feel sometimes is that it's so much happening that it feels like a tsunami of information, you know, like sort of we have the release of GPT 3.5 and then we have the release of GPT 4 and the language models here and the fine tuning and the prompt engineering. So it's like sort of, oh, you know, what is on today? So it feels a bit like that, but it's very, very exciting time to be as well, because if you love learning, then there's plenty to learn.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. 100%, as I say, it's just on the whole Copilot piece at the moment. It's just I'm continuously learning and kind of figuring out things as well. I like we're at a stage now where nobody really knows what Copilot's going to actually do to day-to-day business and day-to-day working and productivity and stuff like that. But I'm really enjoying. I've always been quite technical for the past like 10 to 15 years, like plus, and seems to be moving away from more of like a technical thing to more of a strategic and moving. It's really different, but I am quite enjoying it because all the tech kind of happens in the background now with Copilot and stuff. You don't really do much tech, you kind of just turn it on, but it's like everything leading around it, like making sure people are ready for it on a secure security, making sure people are ready for it, not only a technical way, but a people ready way. So how do people adopt, how do companies adopt it? How do we make sure that when Copilot and AI is out there, how do we make sure people aren't scared of using it? There's lots of like fear mongering and stuff like that in the press at the moment. So people worried about losing their jobs when AI comes around and so it's kind of working out the people side of it and not just the technical side of it as well, which is I find quite interesting at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. I think it has a lot to do with people. And yeah, there is that fear for sure. And I recognize it when I have presented in other conferences, especially for some industries. If you think, for example, teaching, right, like sort of the education industry as well, how it's changing. I think things will evolve. You know, you see that when there is this type of disruptions. In terms of like sort of technology, if you think before you have to code everything by hand and you took so long to do stuff, now is about thinking how you're solving problems in the best way possible. And like you said, right, it's about automating, thinking how the user is going to use the product, educating them. So you're still doing quite a lot if you think that way, but in different aspects, right? Not just in the code or just like fixing bugs and so on.
Yeah, a lot of it's going to be prompt. Everything is going to be prompt-based, in my opinion. In 5 years' time, everything's going to be prompt-based. And I think you can still, it's still a skill, and you're still going to get people that are really good at it and some people are not so good at it, because the way that you ask it, the way that you kind of build up information using prompts and stuff. So even like GitHub Copilot and stuff like that, you've got to be kind of, you've got to know what you're talking about to be able to code within GitHub Copilot. Even if you've got Copilot there ready for you, you've got to still know the parameters of a product, what it can do, what it can't do and stuff like that, but you're just prompting and being able to build off the back of that. So I don't think AI is going to take anyone's jobs. I think it's going to make people more productive and make things easier for people. But then one of our customers said yesterday is like, say if there's a task that normally takes somebody 4 hours, and they manage to use Copilot and it takes them 2 hours. What are they going to do with that other 2 hours? How are we going to measure what they're going to do with that other 2 hours? Are they going to go to the pub on a Friday afternoon instead, or are we going to give them more work? Yeah, or are we going to give them more work to do? Like, it's all good to say we're going to save those amount of hours, but they're just going to sit there and do nothing for that time, and our organization's ready for that and happy for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you think with technology, you know, like sort of with DevOps, for example, continuous integration and continuous delivery. Before coders, you know, I was coding weekends, right? Like if something went wrong, doesn't matter if it's a weekend, Saturday and Sunday, you still have to show up there. So now that has changed quite a lot with GitHub and continuous integration, continuous delivery, like sort of having a trunk and merging your branches into the code. You schedule things. And yeah, people have free time now. They are not in like sort of like disaster mode in the weekends when something goes wrong. So I think it just evolves. For me, it's like, okay, it's going to be free time, but that free time will be using something else, probably to solve a harder problem that we couldn't solve before. Well, at least I'm hoping and quite optimistic in that way, because also we could use it just to browse social media and so on. But, you know, just depends how you use your time as well.
And do you think AI will kind of help people get into IT that possibly wouldn't have got into it in the first place? Maybe it could be coding, it could be anything kind of where AI can stretch. And does that stretch to stretch to people that wouldn't normally be in the IT industry?
I'm just going off on a tangent here.
Like,
but I think yes. I mean, if you think. You know, like, so this is something funny, but when I started in university, I started to realize that all programming was in English. It was, and I know it's a funny realization because when you start to write code, then I started to think, oh my gosh, the people that they are native speakers, they must have such a big advantage. Because like, for me, it's like, what is this if, then, else? I have to learn it first. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, like sort of if you are more exposed to certain technologies, you will learn more. And there is so many platforms, like you have Code Academy, you have so much free stuff now as well in terms of courses. You know, like sort of we have the Microsoft Learn pathway. You can do certifications that before they used to cost thousands of dollars, now it's hundreds only, and a lot of free stuff, YouTube videos. So the barriers to learn have lower. However, it takes a lot of your own determination, your own will, right, to find that information, to follow through, to book that time, and so on. So yeah. I hope that because of is lowering down that barriers to have the technical education, that we will get more people that usually will not be in the field. So I'm hoping that's the case because it's still the field, it's not diverse at all, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking thinking maybe on behalf of some people, but like if I'm a single mum and I'm finding it hard to kind of do my coding job, I'm doing everything all night like you just said, and having to do stuff on the weekend and I can't keep up, then AI is just going to make it more accessible, right, for people that are in that situation. So that's what I'm thinking. It might be a really good tool just for accessibility reasons as well, for people looking to get into IT or stay in IT, because the amount of women in that situation who have come out of IT, I think a lot of our previous guests have said like this the amount of women in their 30s and 40s who actually leave the IT industry is like astronomical. So maybe that will kind of that will help and make things more accessible. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah, well, having kids is hard. I have two. And if I compare before having kids, it's like I have so much free time. And then when you have kids, suddenly all that free time is gone.
Do you know what's crazy? Last night, me and my wife, we went to London to watch a TV show being filmed. We got there and they oversubscribed. We got there 45 minutes early. They oversubscribed and said there was no room left, even though we had tickets and everything. So he was like, oh, well, we're going to London. We're already going through there anyway. Emma's dad was looking after our two children. So we went into London. I showed Emma her new office. So she's starting with CDW next month. So it's my old company. So I went and showed her the office so she wouldn't get lost on her first day. And then went into Covent Garden and she's like, oh, I'm just going to call my friends. Like, and they live 20 minutes down the road. And I just came along and I'm like, I've never had that freedom. Like, just going out. on like 20 minutes notice to go and get some food up in London. It's just like,
yeah, are you crazy?
That was what life, is like without kids.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story again for woe on me with kids and not being able to do so. Sophie, you're lucky. Keep like.
Yeah. I am. But do you know what's mad? I feel like I don't have any free time now. So you say that when you have, before you have kids, you've got loads of free time. Maybe I'm not, you know, appreciating it enough.
Need to get an AI time management tool.
That's it, exactly.
I see them on Instagram all the time.
Yeah, and the amount of times that sometimes I have to present to a big audience, a very, you know, like sort of a generative AI and so on, and just 10 minutes before, I was just trying to feed my kid and like, you know, telling him to do the homework. And like, if you put, it's almost like sort of like day and night, you will know, you know, like sort of see it when you are presenting because you are like sort of so serious and so on. But yeah, this is the technology, right? Like sort of, I think it's possible to do that you can combine your home life with work. It's so different now as well.
Awesome. Cool. So I normally have a question I normally ask people. Two questions, so twofold questions. So, The first part of it was like, can you look back at a certain moment of your career gone right, or a certain situation that particularly bothered you, or like what's like that standout moment in career, could be personal as well, and how have you kind of come across how have you beaten that? How have you come out the other side and come out the other side? Yeah.
I think like sort of joining Microsoft has been a big moment. It was so many interviews, I have to say, and for a period of so many months that I thought, okay, these guys really don't want to hire me, but they're just trying to be polite. But I was thinking, but why they will do that, right? Like, and then when I finally got the offer, this is just what it takes, right? Sometimes the process is super long, and so on. So I think overcoming that grueling interviews and still going with an idea that, yeah, you still have a chance, even though sometimes it feels like you don't, it's been something quite important. Yeah, I mean, when you are trying to find a job, like the interviews, I find it quite hard sometimes when people don't tell you straight away if you did well or you didn't. You know, you wonder your worth sometimes, right? Like you have some self-doubts, I'm doing the right thing and so on. So I think the periods of my career when I have gone through these transitions, and even I think most positions I've been invited. But even that, you know, like sort of it takes time for you to truly understand, like, yeah, what is happening here? I am getting the job or not, and so on. Yeah, that moment, I think it's been quite important in my career because it has allowed me to take the next step and to like say, okay, I'm not 100% prepared for this role, but I'm just going to give it a go, try, and having that sponsors and that people that support you. And also doing things that I thought, no, I should not do this because I have a small kid at home. So traveling from Sweden to Denmark, or having to go from the Netherlands to London in one day and come back and having to do that several times during the month is not okay when you just had a baby. That type of thing, just like take that thinking away and just do it. I will figure out how I do it later. I'm just going to do it. Has helped me through my career. And obviously my husband has been a great partner because, you know, sometimes you just have to dump everything on that person that is there. So he's being amazing. But yeah, it's just taking that fear. I think, you know, taking risk is being one of the biggest things that has helped me to grow.
Yeah, awesome. And the flip side, what's been like the career highlight for yourself?
I will say going into Silicon Valley in terms of trips, because especially now that, you know, like traveling is not as common as before, mm-hmm. not for tech anyway, with Teams and so on. Like sort of just being there in the heart of technology, working in different startups. This is my time at Shell. We did quite a lot with different companies in Silicon Valley. So that was one highlight, I will say. It was pretty special, yeah.
Awesome. Quite a lot of times, trips are normally the answers to this, like different types of trips. And to be fair, when I look back on a career highlight, for me, it's also a trip that I took. So, yeah. So it says it a lot. Yeah. I think the human race are very much infused and uplifted by travel and stuff, and it shows quite a lot in that answer. So, yeah, definitely.
My human connection, right, as well. I think technology... Yeah. Plays a role, but I think having that coffee or shaking the hand of someone. I met the CEO of Adobe, for example, during that trip, because there was a conference going on there. He just came, you know, say hello to us and had a chat, and we asked lots of questions. So it was also that kind of serendipity moment, like you feel like, oh, this is where people talk mm-hmm. about it. Like you meet famous people actually in technology. Bumping into the corridors. So yeah, it's pretty special. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Sophie, anything else? I think we're coming towards the end of the run, our usual run time.
No, I think that's been great. And it's been nice to sort of just sit back and hear things from a technical standpoint as well, and learn more about Microsoft and what it's like working for there. So no, it's been really good. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, I really enjoy it as well. Thank you so much. And Sophie, are you from, not from Ireland, right? Like I'm really bad with accents, so, right?
Yorkshire, England. Yorkshire,
yeah.
Yeah, very, very Yorkshire. But no, in fairness, I'm half Scottish. And so it's probably a mix of anything. And I've got family in Ireland as well, so.
Okay.
All over. Yeah.
Yeah. I always try to guess, but I'm terrible. Yeah. Even after so many times in Wales and in the UK, I can't. Yeah.
Do you know what? I've never been to Wales, but I would love to go. I've never had reason or, you know, for some reason, I've just never been. Everywhere else ticked off, but Wales, I need to go to Wales.
Yeah, it's super green.
I think I've got the most stereotypical English accent. It's quite easy
to pick it up, isn't it? Yeah, London accent, yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, thank you so much. This was very relaxed and very nice. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you to have me on.
Thank you so much.
Real pleasure.
Hope you have a nice evening.
Yeah, you too. Yeah. I will go sleep and well. Have a glass of wine and relax.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Please make sure you hit that like, share and subscribe button to help us promote our message. You can also follow us on Twitter at MSFT Spotlight, and we're also on LinkedIn, the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. And finally, we'd like to tell you a little bit about BitTitan and thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
Remote migrations start here. Let MigrationWiz do the work for you. It's fast, secure, and 100% SaaS, which means you can migrate at any time and from anywhere. Migrate mailboxes, documents, public folders, personal archives, or even Microsoft Teams with just a few clicks. No special training needed, and no customer downtime. When the work matters, choose MigrationWiz.